From the creators who brought you RuPaul's Drag Race and Million Dollar Listing, this is World of Wonder's Wow Report. Things that make us go wow.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Wow Report, where we count down the top 10 things of the week that made us go
wow.
Yes, that's right. I'm Fenton Bailey, co-founder of World of Wonder, joined by our chief creative officer, Tom Campbell.
Hello, hello.
And legendary literary sensation, James St. James.
Woo!
Bow to thee.
Right, you know what? Let's just start. Number 10.
Number 10.
Finally took the time to watch The Greatest Night in Pop. It's a documentary on Netflix about the recording of We Are the World from 1985. Some people don't like that song. I love that song. And this documentary says the obvious, which I've known for years, which is it's such a simple song. By it being so, all of the 30 whatever celebrities, their voices are at their peak. Tina Turner into Willie Nelson, into Dionne Warwick, into Diana Ross.
But can I give you a counterpoint very quickly? Because
I'm just got his thesis out.
No. Because you're the thing is, when you say that people don't like it, I don't like it because Do They Know It's Christmas had come out 3 months earlier and it was the same formula.
Chef,
and that was a gorgeous song.
This documentary will tell you that Harry Belafonte, after hearing that, because that came out like November, December of 1984, and they recorded this in like February of 1985. So it was very close together. And what's the guy that's the name, the Boomtown rap?
Bob Geldof.
Sir Bob Geldof to you.
He was, you know, wonderful. And Harry Belafonte said, we have white people taking care of black people. Let's get black people to take care of black people. So it was him. It was Lionel Richie. It was Stevie Wonder. It was Michael Jackson and it was Quincy Jones. And they came together and created.
And Diana Ross and Dionne Warwick.
Well, then they invited everybody. But that were those were the building blocks. It's like, and Ken Cragen.
LaToya.
And Ken Cragen was the manager of Kenny Rogers and Lionel Richie. A great man, a great humanitarian as well. And he saw the vision. And if you got the right people lined up, everyone would say yes. And I wept out loud alone several times.
Oh, my God.
Because
they didn't invite Madonna. Is that why you wept? That's why I wept.
Yes. They couldn't decide between Madonna and Cyndi Lauper.
Yeah.
And they ended up picking Cyndi Lauper because they thought she had a better solo voice. And I just have to say, I love Madonna. And from Do They Know It's Christmas to We Are the World came Live Aid and Farm Aid. And Madonna, like, you know, everybody got into it. Like, you know, because artists felt like,
oh, the moment in time.
We can do something. And I'm sorry, we live in cynical ages now and people don't give or as openly. It was pretty remarkable. And there's a quote that Quincy Jones, I watched his documentary a few years ago. He talked about the show. And he had sort of said to Michael Jackson, if the song needs strings, God will tell us. And he goes, and you have to leave enough room for God in the studio. Like magical things happen. You know, it was the night of the American Music Awards. How do you stage something where you get Bruce Springsteen, Ray Charles, Paul Simon, Steve Perry, Daryl Hall and John Oates, the Pointer Sisters, we didn't have a solo, you know, Sheila E., Prince was in the, it's just how magic happens and how a song comes together. And, you know, each of them recorded that song in front of each other. Like Quincy Jones is a genius. And Lionel Richie also is a big part of the documentary. And he is one of the kindest, most fatherly people on the planet. He was putting out fires all night. People like were freaking out, didn't know what was going on. And he goes, the one thing you can't say to somebody is like, what do you think? Because then you'll have 47 opinions. So it's just like, you know, they show little meltdown moments, not big meltdowns, but where things, people, you know, they were changing the words. People couldn't hit the note. You know, it was fun things, but it comes together and it's this beautiful thing. And it also reminded me, because the first time I saw it, I was at Harvard. I was in Claverly Hall and it was going to premiere around the world at one time. And so billions of people heard and saw it. And I had rushed out of the shower, was standing in a towel or naked by myself, watching it on the Channel 5 News and weeping in WCVB Boston. It's
funny because I was at NYU. I was in my dorm room when it came. It was the same thing. I totally remember.
That kind of moment of communal compassion and charity.
Yeah.
Seemed to sort of hit the iceberg with Hands Across America, right? When everyone was going to hold hands across the country.
And then nobody held hands. Nobody wanted to touch anyone.
And then downtown in the East Village, where we were, there was everybody got together and did Downtown, did a recording of
Diane
Downtown.
Brill, Keith Haring,
yes, Andy. Yes. James, to my eternal shame, the Pop-Tarts were not invited.
No.
Yes. So there you go. We were the Madonna of We Are the World.
Right? Yes. I've always said you were the Madonna of Downtown.
I came to LA that summer of 84, and I was here right before this thing was taped, and it captures in B-roll and some recreations, but the 80s in LA, the cars, the hair, Sunset Boulevard, Ken Cragen's office. It is. That's why partially why it stirred me so much. I felt like someone had opened up
your time.
My
traveling.
Memory. Yeah. My memory bank. Yeah. And how still imperfect celebrities were, how greasy and their hair wasn't quite right. You know, it was a realer time. I know it's an old, what old men say, but it's true. But the greatest night in pop, I highly, highly recommend it.
All right, James, number nine.
Number nine.
Wicked Little Letters is, it's a sleepy seaside town in Britain, and it's the 1920s, and it's a true story, okay? And it stars Olivia Colman as anybody, Tom?
I don't know.
She's a middle-aged spinster.
Passive-aggressive
bitch. a sort of vindictive, nasty, miserable middle-aged spinster.
I'm there for it.
Who lives with her evil, Victorian, righteous, religious zealot parents, okay? And they live in this little sort of shack all crammed together. And a woman moves in next door, and she's this free-spirited Irish woman. And this is right after the war in Ireland or something, so it's very scandalous. And then an Irish woman moves to town, and she's living with a black man, which is even more scandalous. And they have this wild, raucous sex every night, and they're banging against the wall, and Olivia and the parents can hear it, blah, blah, blah. Well, soon after that, Olivia starts getting these mash notes, these letters in the mail.
Where they cut up the individual letters, like ransom notes.
No. That's a point, because it's very florid writing that it is. But it's like, I want to fuck you in your nostrils, you sperm-covered whore. It's just nasty.
Really, James? Really?
Really? No, I'm serious. It's okay. Really nasty, weird stuff.
Sounds like Kim Petras' new slut pop.
No. Okay, I don't know about that. But she ends up telling the police that it's the next door neighbor who's doing it, because they get into a fight, and she thinks that this woman is just like loud, and she smokes, and she goes to the bars, and she has a foul mouth. So she accuses the next door neighbor. The next door neighbor is arrested and sent off to prison, like Reading Gaol or someplace where it's hard labor. It's very bad. Well, then the second half of the movie is it goes from like comedy into like a Agatha Christie detective, where everyone in the town starts getting these letters, and everyone is a suspect, and there's all these, you know, crazy townspeople, and they all get together and they're trying to sleuth and find the mystery, blah, blah, blah. And it's absolutely fascinating and absolutely adorable. And I think that when it comes to HBO Max or Hulu or streaming or whatever, definitely spend some time and watch it, because Olivia is Olivia, and she's absolutely fantastic. And everybody in it, it's like watching an old Agatha Christie or something, because it's like just straight out of central casting, all these like old British people. And like I said, it's a true story, and it became this huge national scandal about these letters in this little tiny town, this little tiny seaside town. And it was like they discovered who it was. And
it'd make a great double feature with Serial Mom, with Kathleen Turner saying all those dirty
words. There you go. Yeah.
So that's Wicked Little Letters. It's in theaters now, right?
Yes. It's open nationally this week. Yes.
Oh, okay. Great. All right. Well, let's go on to number eight.
Number eight.
I went to the movies. I saw Civil War. Alex Garland's film about a civil war in America.
The old Civil War. This is a new
present
Civil
day.
War.
Yes. No, thank you for that clarification. Sort of in the near future, like now, basically. Yes. After the election, probably.
When I saw the ads for it, and when I saw the big billboards and stuff, I kept thinking to myself, isn't that a little irresponsible to put that in the universe, to manifest that in this election year?
Excellent question. It was greenlit in 2022.
Okay.
But also, There's a president of the United States, but it's not him who cannot be named. It's not, this is not a Republican Democrat issue. This film begins in medias res, right in the middle of everything. In fact, it begins with the president giving a victory speech, and he's practicing the victory speech. And you can just sense from the way it's filmed, it's so brilliantly filmed. The entire film is flawless, but you can just sense the way he's doing this victory speech, preparing it, reading it off the teleprompter, the close-ups. You're like, something's wrong here, you know? And indeed, something is wrong. It's Alex Garland who wrote and directed. Now, Alex Garland wrote 28 Days Later, you know, the fabulous zombie movie where everyone's infected with rage.
Yeah.
He wrote The Beach, but he wrote and directed this. And the movie tells the story from the point of view of a war photojournalist, played by Kirsten Dunst, which is amazing. She's amazing in it.
And I love Kirsten, yes.
Photojournalist, of course, is called Lee Miller in tribute to
the real Lee Miller,
who was a supermodel.
Bad Ray, and yes.
And who was also a war journalist. She photographed the bodies when the concentration camps were liberated.
She was in Hitler's bathtub, yes.
She was. Fabulous photo. And she's seen it all, and she's sort of very bitter and bitten. Until, of course, she sees a younger version of herself, a young girl who wants to be a photo war journalist like herself. Long story short, it's a road trip. They're going to DC to interview the president, and the little girl gets to go along, and there's four of them in the car. And so far, you know, you're like, so far so tropey, right? Who's marked for death? Who's going to survive? But it's very, very disturbing. I don't know how he did it, but you are sitting there with a permanent sense of dread. And, you know, in a civil war torn country, you're driving along empty roads, there's dead bodies. And you just have this feeling something awful is going to happen at any moment. But what he gets so brilliantly right is just when you expect something to go wrong, it doesn't. And when you're completely not expecting it, there'll be a huge bang, a huge gunshot. You really feel like you are in this. And it's very genuinely, I would say, traumatizing to a degree that I'm not sure if audiences are going to want to go watch it.
The idea of that we are on the brink of a civil war anyway is one of those things that it might be too close to home. It might be too terrifying to see.
Too real.
It is. And I'm glad you tell this story, though, because when I saw the ads for it, I assumed it was like a Michael Bay blow everything up type thing. And to hear that it's this sort of like...
I felt physically sick at the violence because they're war photographers. So she's having flashbacks and you're seeing the pictures she's taken and it's very unsparing. And you would expect the hard-bitten war photographer to tell the young ingenue, you know, you can't feel, you can't, you know, all that stuff. But there's another story going on. And I think the film is asking us, do photojournalists report the war? Because it's very much, I report the war so people will know and question. Is that bullshit? And are they actually merely disseminating violent pornography? And by extension, is the film itself just an exercise in violent pornography?
Well,
and
I think you can extrapolate that and just put it to CNN and MSNBC. Are they reporting the news or are they just inciting more, violence and everything? Because sometimes it feels like they are being...
The news, period, is awful. And it's, if it bleeds, it leads. It hasn't changed. But it's always the frame. Like, am I going to close up on the... forgive me, the dead baby, the dumpster. You know, you stay home during the day and hear the local news and it's just one horrible thing after another.
But are they trying to do something good or are they trying to gin up this pot, you know, stir the pot?
You know, fear goes a long way. I try not to watch it.
And I think people may well stay away from this in droves, even though I think it is a brilliantly made film. And I think one of the things that comes across so clearly and powerfully is that once you enter the realm of civil war, it's not about this side versus that side from an ideological point of view. It's just these people are trying to kill those people, and those people are trying to kill these people, and that's all it's about. And no one's giving orders. It's complete chaos. And the shining scene of the film, and I can say this because it's been in the trailer, is Jesse Plemons. Jess Plemons.
I love him, yes.
It is this scene that will stay with me forever, not necessarily because it was so horrifically grotesque. There was a casualness to it. I tell you, it was captivating. It was appalling. It was horrifying. And ironically, it's the scene where he says to someone who's on the ground, you know, yeah, you're American, but what kind of American are you? And this guy has just basically used the social breakdown of Civil War to go around rounding up everybody who's not American in his book and shoot them by the dumpster load. And the twist is, the reason they all end up in this predicament is because of a little girl. She caused this situation. So the whole thing, I just came away from this movie thinking, fuck.
Well, and I guess, wait, the question is, would you survive a civil war?
No, probably not. I couldn't even survive the after party. I could not go to the after party. And I will go anywhere for a gin and tonic. I was just like, I have to get in my car and go home. I just could not imagine people just circulating. Oh, I love that film. It's like, I just felt.
It'd be like going to a wake afterwards. Yeah.
Yes. So I know I got to go to a break. I'm so sorry to talk on about Civil War. Blake, you got a question?
I do. Well, actually, Tom has a question.
In the documentary, Lionel Richie shares, he was writing an anthem and he was like, what kind of anthem should it be? What famous historical anthem inspired the song We Are the World?
Yeah, I couldn't think of the song and I tried to Google it last night and couldn't find it. So I was like, I'll just let Tom ask it.
I love that. We'll have the answer right after the break. You're listening to the WOW Report here on Radio Andy. And stay with us because we have a very special guest right after the break.
You're listening to World of Wonders WOW Report. Things that make us go wow.
Welcome back to the WOW Report. Fenton here with Tom, James, Blake, and a very special guest in a hot second. But Tom, the answer to the question you asked.
In the documentary, The Greatest Night in Pop, Lionel Richie talked about he was playing, testing different kind of anthems to find the right tempo and the right notes and the right structure. Which famous historical anthem is We Are the World based upon?
God Save the Queen.
Nope.
Mine eyes have seen the glory of the coming of the Lord. No.
Almost.
When Johnny comes like marching home again. Hurrah.
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 Hurrah. It's Rule Britannia.
Ah.
Rule Britannia, Britannia rules the world.
We Are the World is, I love everything about it, except the song is so wishy-washy compared to Rule Britannia.
He fed with the right tempo. He also talked about, I'll stop talking, but Michael Jackson doesn't play, there's a lot of insight into Michael Jackson. Michael doesn't play an instrument, so he would just hum, like la la la. You know, he was so they were working him at the piano, Michael giving vocals, and they created magic. Listen to it again.
Let's go to number 7.
Well, coincidentally, last week we talked about how unsafe Hollywood feels sometimes, but how we're true die hard Angelinos. Well, just moments after that, someone rushed into the conference room. His name was Randy Barbato, co-founder of World of Wonder, and he told us this true story.
Number 7.
Okay.
Oh my God. Oh my God.
So here's the thing. You know, so you guys know that I drive a Toyota Tacoma. I'm a simple man, right? I'm a man of the people. Okay. But my kids were like, come on, Dad, let's get another car. So I got a Lucid. Who here about the Lucid? Anyway, we're not going to go into it. It was just an idea.
Lucid, you will not shut up about how it is a superior electric car to the
Tesla. It is the most efficient. It's the fastest and most efficient electric car on the planet. But the company's the about to go bankrupt.
And the most expensive.
It's not the most expensive, Fenton.
Well, and it's also not built by a maniac, megalomaniac dictator wannabe. So
exactly.
There you go.
So it's a cool car. Anyway, long story long, I had to go to the bank. And as RuPaul said, what are you going to the bank for? Who goes to the bank anymore? But that's a whole nother story. So I went to the bank just right over here on Selma. I parked on Selma. The bank's on Vine. I was talking to Tom Wolf on the phone. And I was saying to him, these new cars are so weird. Like, you just leave them running because you leave them running. And I was like, I don't know. I don't know if I'm ever going to get used to this. I go into the bank. 2 minutes, I'm in the bank.
The Wells Fargo right there. I that's mine too, yes.
Yeah, I come out. My car's gone. I freak out. My car, I had it for 2 days. 2 days I had this car. So I'm losing my mind. I call Tom Curatore. I'm like, oh my God, my car, it's stolen. I don't even know what to do. I'm going to call the police. I tell him where I am. He goes onto his phone, Detective Tom, because he has downloaded the app. I call 911. Lovely lady comes on. She's amazing. I wish I had her phone number because I would have sent her something. I would have sent her a muffin basket. I would have sent her a muffin basket. Anyway, she's talking to me. She's like, okay, I've got the police on their way to you and Air Patrol. Air Patrol's arriving. Tom texts me and he sends me the address. It's at 1440 Ivor. It's like a block and a half away. So I'm talking to her. I'm like, I start running to Ivar. She's like, sir, do not go near the car. We have Air Patrol above you. There's literally a helicopter. Suddenly I'm in slow motion. The music, the strings kick in. And I'm running to Tom in his lime green car, pulls up alongside. He's like, you know, don't go to the car.
Get in.
She's like, I have three cars. There are three cop cars. I can see them. One of the cops, by the way, and also Daniel, the security guard. Everyone's there. It's like a party on Ivar. And Daniel, our security guard, like sees one of the policemen. He's like, hey, he's the guy who arrested him. Remember when Daniel got into the altercation? Anyway, I digress.
He was innocent.
Yes, he was innocent, but it was like all the local Hollywood police. They were all there. Everyone was there except for my car. The car was not there. I said to Tom, check to see it where, and it was around the block, according to the map, in the parking lot at McDonald's around the block. So we go over there, we go to the parking lot. There it is. The police surround it. And I had, guns out. And they were like, okay, open the trunk, but step back. We all had to step back. And then you have to push the button to open the trunk. But my car doesn't have a trunk, it has a frunk. It was a very funny moment.
The Tesla has the frunk.
My frunk's bigger than your frunk. I know that for a fact.
What the frunk?
You know, anyway, the frunk. Is the
but we're losing the thread here because there's a person who's being arrested. I need to know who it is.
There's no one in the car. They thought there was like a dead body or something. It all took place.
There was no one in the car because Tom Curatore had the presence of mind to sound the alarm in the car as it was being driven away.
So
the
guy was like, beep, beep.
Honey, this Tom Curatore needs a
raise. I know. He's now, we're
he
all work
on a vacation.
We're all someday. Working for him now.
Randy, I have a question for you. How was the car stolen? I don't understand.
You know,
I happen to know that not only did Randy leave the car on, but he left the key fob in
all
the
right,
car.
Okay. All
it's
right.
It's a new car.
And the door was open. The door was open with a big sign saying come and
so
get
it. Still says Hollywood isn't that dangerous. You just
free
can't
car.
Leave your car on side streets.
Just two quick points and then I'll leave, okay? And I'll take my trophy with me. Number one.
Wait, for those of you who are listening and not watching, Randy has his Emmy with him.
Okay, yes. I don't leave home without it. I should have had it with me.
Use it as a weapon.
The car got stolen at 2 o'clock because I checked, and I had a meeting at 2:30 here at World of Wonder. I was only 20 minutes late with my car. I was only 20 minutes late. I got my car stolen. I got it returned, and it was all fine. I wasn't even sweating.
Remember when people used to talk about doing lunchtime lipo? Now it's lunchtime car theft.
Well, this is one of those things, though, that you think that it takes 20 minutes for the cops to come or an hour or you're waiting. No,
they were so amazing. The Hollywood cops are amazing. They're amazing. Wait, one last thing. Here's my real number seven. Am I number seven? No, come on.
You're number seven.
I just want to share my current obsession. It's Chef Marco _NYC.
Oh,
he is amazing. Chef Marco _NYC.
Get him for the pit crew, please.
He's a chef. listen to his voice.
Cesare,
wait.
Pasta lunga. Which one is your favorite? Pasta lunga or pasta corta? Pasta lunga, pasta corta. That's what every mom.
Pasta lunga, pasta corta. He's amazing.
Gorgeous.
I in fact DM'd him because I saw that he was in Vegas and I invited him to come to Drag Race Live. He wasn't available that night, but he's phenomenal. He he's inspired me to start making my sauces again for real, because, you know, Jersey, Italian, whatever. Chef Marco, bye.
And for those of you listening who think, wait, my tax dollars go to chase Randy's luxury car down Vine, give me a call.
Well, the cops didn't really give a damn about my graffiti.
I was just going to say, I have a feeling if I were to call, I would not be getting the same.
James, if you were to call, you would be arrested. That's all.
It's exactly it.
For parking tickets.
Number 6.
This is a rough one. I don't know if you guys have been following this story. The Killer Jocks coming out of Arizona. They're called the Gilbert Goons. They went to Gilbert High School in Queens Creek, Arizona. It's this huge, huge story. 24 hours a day, you hear about it in Arizona, New Mexico. You hear about it overseas in Daily Mail. You hear about it all over Europe. But for some reason, it's not being told on the national news here. And I have a theory after I tell you about the story. Okay. So there are these 7 high school jocks at a high school party, and they beat up a young boy named Preston Lord. Okay. And they kill him.
Oh.
And immediately afterwards, everybody at the party starts texting everybody else. And one of the guys, Tanner Renner is his name. He texted, I was throwing hammer punches, man. And then he says, I got into a fight and accidentally killed this kid. I guess I'm just too strong. And then he says, bro, I put that boy on life support. And so they're all texting each other these horrible, horrible things. Now, immediately afterwards, in the aftermath, Tanner Renner's father, who was a bigwig in the town, he owns the car dealerships, and he supplies the policemen with their car, their Dodges, this type of thing. Well, he asks his staff to help cover up the murder so his son gets off. Now, at the same time, he has plans to whisk the son away to the family cabin in the mountains until his knuckles heal, okay? This is the father doing that. The knuckles are all black and blue and scraped. And they're also, the father and the mother are planning to get the son to Mexico so he doesn't have to do any time or whatever like that. Now, it gets even worse than that, because Tanner is being investigated. The police are already investigating. The FBI are there. Everybody's investigating. Everybody in the school knows that Tanner was the leader of this group of the goons who killed this boy. And Tanner is still allowed to play football on the football team, because he is the high school jock. And not only is he allowed to play on football, he wins player of the year, player of the game. He's winning all these awards that people are voting for him. The students are voting for him. He keeps winning all these awards. Well, the coach gets fired because of it. Okay. Now, even worse, when the police are talking to Tanner and Tanner's father, the police department is under fire for providing special valet services to the Tanners when they come to the Maricopa police station. A deputy pulled the millennial white Tesla mid-model X, is that yours, Fenton?
Oh.
Into a private car park so they could avoid running the gauntlet of the press. So it's one of those situations where there are two tiers of justice that we are learning in real time with Trump, with the rich and the poor. And that is why I believe that it's not a national story, because it feeds into that narrative that the rich have it better when it comes to justice, and this is an election year, and they don't want to add to that. What do you think of this story?
I feel physically sick. It feels like a Civil War type story.
Yeah.
Why did it doesn't matter actually, but Maricopa County is interesting because this is where Sheriff Joe was. The sheriff,
sure,
many years, and kept people in tents and made them wear pink underwear and things like that. prisoners in tents.
And it does it does matter because they killed him because he was gay.
Yeah. So, and he's just this cute, cute, adorable little kid with his whole life at him, sweet little smile. And these jocks are just what you expect. They're just these, you know, rich, affluenza jocks.
It sounds like a cliche. It sounds like an old movie plot that is this.
It sounds
happen.
Like River's Edge is what it sounds like.
Yeah,
it sounds
this can't like, happen yes. anymore. And here it is happening. Mm-hmm. Human nature. Yeah. What's the name of the young man who was?
Preston Lord was who.
Preston
was,
Lord, who was God murdered. Bless you and your family and all of your friends and people. How awful! How just awful!
All right, number five.
Number five.
So it's spring break, and I took Nolan. It's like, let's go away. And I have this hankering for bleak winter landscapes. So I thought, let's go to Fogo Island.
Just what teenagers love. A barren.
He is from California, so it'd be exotic for him.
So Fogo Island is off the coast of Newfoundland. It's pretty much inside the Arctic Circle, not quite. It takes about a day to get there from Toronto. So, you know, it's a sort of day and a half journey. I might have mentioned it before because it used to be a fishing village. And then the moratorium, I think in 92, ended cod fishing. Everybody lost their livelihood. And the dad of a father of 11 said to his daughter, who was the only one in the family who could read and write, he burned his boat. He said, you have to do something. She grew up. She made bazillions in fiber optics. She returned to Fogo Island and built almost like a spaceship, this incredible inn on this barren, rocky island, and is not rebuilding, reimagining the entire community. Because it's not just it's a premium place to stay, but everybody in the community is involved with it. And it is. I want to talk about it some other time.
At it right now. It is absolutely so crazy and futuristic and wild.
It is. It's unbelievable. And the experience of being there is you might think, oh, well, that's just a luxury experience. But it's actually very much everybody who works there is local or they've people who've come from far away. And I can't tell you for the sense of community. I've never really experienced anything like it. It was really great. The interesting thing, there's so many interesting things about it, but it's quite near where the Titanic went down. It's not far. And it's not permanently snowy, but I was sitting in my room reading this book, Brickle, Nish and Nobley, which is a Newfoundland treasury of terms for ice and snow.
Oh, so
I want to ask you, what is, James, what is Brickle?
Brickle would be hard snow as opposed to slushy snow.
It's brittle ice.
Brittle ice. Well, that makes sense. Yes.
All right. What is a clinkerbell?
Oh, a clinkerbell is a snowball.
Nope.
A clinkerbell is an igloo. A clinkerbell is just a snowflake.
Tom?
It is a bell made out of ice.
It's an icicle. a spitting frost. A spitting frost is when it's so cold, it makes your face prickly.
Okay.
Oh, okay.
And here's one, ballycatted. Ballycatted means covered with a layer of ice formed on top of waves along a shoreline. I mean...
Well, wait, this is a whole book. Couldn't this just be
a whole book.
An Instagram thread or something?
Well, if you ever looked at my Instagram, James, you'd see I already posted about it. But it was absolutely, and icebergs float by. I mean, I haven't yet seen one, but I tell you that what the locals do is they go out in their boats and they shoot at the icebergs, shoot bits off, and then they put bits of ice in their fridges, in their freezers, have with their drinks.
Yeah. How many times have you been there?
This is my second time, and it was just.
What did Nolan think?
I was going to say, what was Nolan's takeaway?
Well, I thought he was going to be bored, but he wasn't bored for a minute. And he was actually, at one point he was like, I just want to go to the spa. Because we were off like meeting, having lunch with the locals, eating like cod's lips and cod's tongues. And,
oh my goodness.
And we were learning, we were with the hookers of Fogo Island.
The
we
hookers?
Making
oh,
hookers.
My, I mean, I'm sure
oh,
you're
that kind of trip.
And here's a picture of me holding an ice bit of an iceberg, which will
nice.
Yeah. And when you have an iceberg in your gin and tonic, it goes bing bing bing. You can hear it popping. It's
sure the oxygen that's been trapped in being released.
Yes,
probably a million year old oxygen.
I would say winter landscape. You know, like whether it's Night Country or Murder at the End of the World, it's all about your winter yeah. landscapes are trending, and I think maybe it's because pretty soon there won't be any snow anywhere. Let's take one more break. House of Laughs is our iconic new all-queer stand-up comedy series special coming to WOW Presents Plus. Lawrence Chaney, Joelkin Booster, Irene Tu, Cameron Esposito, Jared Goldstein, Guy Branum, and many, many more. New episodes Tuesdays on WOW Presents Plus, wowpresentsplus.com. Got a question, Blake?
Something tragic happened on this day in 1994. What was it?
All right. We'll be right back after the break with the answer.
You're listening to World of Wonders WOW Report. Things that make us go wow.
Welcome back to WOW Report. Fenton here with James and Tom and Blake.
And I asked, something really tragic happened on this day in 1994. What was it?
That would be 30 years ago, right? 30 years ago.
Say maybe Kurt Cobain's death.
That's right.
Oh, Kurt Cobain. I remember it. Yeah, like it was ooh. Yesterday.
Yeah.
All right, let's carry on with our countdown. We've reached number four, Tom.
Number four.
You know how much I really detest all the discussion of cannibalism on our show. And yet, I feel like I haven't really contributed. So, it's contagious.
This episode is the bleakest show.
There is some book banning going on at Harvard University. Book banning. They are banning a French book and the name of it is
Arsène Houssay's Des Destinées de l'Homme.
Yes. And it is bound in human skin.
Now, did the human contribute, or was it taken afterwards? What is the story?
The volume's first owner, a French physician and bibliophile, Dr. Ludwig Bouland, who lived from 1839 to 1933, he took the skin without consent from the body of a deceased female patient in a hospital where he worked as a medical student in the 1860s. And Houghton Library, which is right there between Widener Library and Lamont Library at Harvard Yard. Widener was built for a survivor, a guy who died in the Titanic. And Lamont Library is famous because that's where you cruise boys in the restrooms. But Houghton was in between. And the whole time I was there, I didn't know it housed a book clad in human skin. And
well, I guess my question is, do you have to put lotion on the book every couple of days to keep it from drying up?
I had all kinds of skincare questions, too. Like, would it be a serum? Would it be a lotion? What would you want to do to refresh it?
I would say that doctor's in danger, girl, because isn't that how the start of Evil Dead started?
Oh.
Like a book bound in human skin?
I wonder if that's where it came from. I wonder if this is a very famous book.
And second, how many books are there at Harvard to need three libraries next door to each other?
Well, it's a
university. Well, I mean, that's, you know, I mean,
it's a university.
It's
what, someone important and rich dies, so they have to buy all new books?
Part of that.
To name the building after them.
I mean, there are a lot of books. There are a lot of books. They go back a long time. And Houghton was known for its rare books. This was a rare book. This is what's horrible, I guess, about the story is
medium rare.
I don't. Yes, thank you. I don't think it's that creepy. I think it's weird and bizarre, but it's kind of historical. But there's been all this pressure since, and it finally in 2022, they were like, we need to get rid of this. But now, because it's universities, they're having another committee meeting. And
where are they going
to
put it? I mean, they're going to get rid of it, but they're not going to throw it away.
They're trying to figure out what's
bury it.
They're trying to figure out what to do with it. They're trying to look back and get more information on the woman whose flesh they took.
If you want to use my body to bind books, go right ahead. Maybe I'll
be right with that too. I think we have a whole
screenage
shop, right? It feels like an Etsy shop.
I sort of think, Tom,
died. Would you like to cover that? We'll have your cooking
book. Yes, exactly.
I would be a book. No, I would love to be a book. Obviously, look behind me. I would love to be a library. But I wonder if you could just put a disclaimer note or something on it saying this is the life of the woman and you should know this before. I think you can keep it. I think they're gifts. Yeah. I think if they did it today, you could get rid of it, because it's an artistic treasure from the antiquities, not antiquity, but you know.
Yes, or taboo or something. But I think
a sort of related question, you know, like oil and our dependence on fossil fuels, you know, it's all.
Yeah, it's all dinosaurs and cavemen. Yeah.
Why can't we take everybody who dies and turn them into oil?
Well, because it's a million year process that it takes.
Think ahead, James. Think ahead.
You can make diamonds. Diamonds used to take millions of years to make.
Well, yeah, those aren't the kind of diamonds you want to wear, darling. Those are very and very unattractive.
For costume jewelry,
that's
maybe.
That's for poor people, darling.
All right. Okay. Well,
do not get me lab-grown diamonds, is what I'm saying, for my upcoming birthday.
But right, I would say, yeah, people that. Today, you can make an Etsy shop. People, grandpa's tattooed skin is now on the family cookbook. It sounds...
And can you imagine like someone with an iconic tattoo? That's the one you want.
Yeah. I say make Christmas decorations out of my scrotum.
No thanks.
make ornaments. Just fill them with styrofoam and there you go.
That would be small ornaments, wouldn't it?
I hate to move on, but shall we go to number three? Or is it going to be even worse?
It's going to be even worse.
Number three.
This is our Rest in Perfection segment because two people died this week that I want to just sort of take a moment and talk about. The first is a cutie little actor who was very up and coming. His name, it was Chase Perdomo, and he was on The Chilling Adventures of Sabrina, the Teenage Witch on Netflix. And then most recently, he was on Gen V, the Boys spinoff that we've talked about on the show many times. And he was absolutely wonderful on the show. And he was, you know, one of the big stars, and everybody on the show was becoming a big star and, you know, seen at Fashion Week and things like that. And he died in a motorcycle accident just one evening coming home, I don't know from where. And now, of course, Gen V, the production is up and, you know, they've stopped production. They don't know how to address it. They were halfway through the season. It's one of those horrible, horrible tragedies that this kid was just wonderful. And if you have a chance, go back and watch Gen V or Chilling Adventures of Sabrina. He was really quite good. Then the other person who died. Now, remember last week when I was talking about how psychic I was?
Yes. Well,
listen to this story. So Sunday afternoon, I was very bored and nothing on streaming was catching my attention. I was flipping through everything and I have about 100 movies saved on DVR and I was going through them very listlessly, and out of the blue, for no reason whatsoever, I chose It Came from Outer Space, the classic sci-fi movie, 1953, Barbara Rush, where the aliens are in rubber costumes and it's sort of like a pod invasion of the body snatchers type situation with blah, blah, blah. Anyway, I was watching this at about 3 o'clock and I was really into it. And I remember thinking to myself and making a mental note to check out the episode with Barbara Rush, where she plays Jamie Summers' mother on The Bionic Woman.
Oh my God. Because that's good.
Yes, I love Barbara Rush. She was one of the most elegant women in Hollywood and so beautiful, so classy. Well, as I'm finishing the movie, I turn it off, I go on X, and the first thing I see is Barbara Rush dies at 94. Like, literally, I'm telling you, like, not, and there was no, I had no idea she was sick.
Her spirit passed through your home.
Well, I think what happened is as she was sailing up into the cosmos,
yes,
she was giving me a goodbye.
Yes.
She was saying goodbye to me as this was, because I have spent my whole life, she was Nora Clavicle on the Batman series.
Yes.
You know, she was with the Penguin and the Joker on three episodes. She was on All My Children, Tom. She was,
I feel like she was in the TV version of Please Don't Eat the Daisies.
Oh, that could be. She was also on Peyton Place, of course. That was where she really.
Yes.
I think she was on Dallas for a while, too.
Domingo Road for one season.
Domingo Road. She was, yes. And she played Morgan Fairchild's mother on that. And Morgan had some wonderful things to say about her. But she was, when you see a picture of her, Fenton, if you've never, I'm sure you've seen her because she's been in every Fantasy Island, Maud, Love Boat, you know, Dragnet. I mean, she's been in everything. She was in a very classic Night Gallery. She was in one of the most famous Night Gallery episodes.
I mentioned her name in a Drag Race meeting, and everyone was, who? And I showed the picture, and they're like, oh, of course. She is like a face, a face that never changed. She's just really beautiful for her.
And she had one of the best hairdos in Hollywood. It was just one of those bubble helmet dos that never moved. It was just, she was a classy dame, and God rest her soul. So I love
Fun
you, Barbara.
Fun fact, my friend Abe Sylvia, who we mentioned before, he became friends with her later in her life, and she was sort of a mentor to him. And she was married to three men. One of them was Roger Cowan, the great publicist. And
Jeffrey Hunter was one of them, right?
Yeah, her first husband was Jeffrey Hunter, who was in King
who
of Kings.
Christ in the, yes. Who was King Jesus Christ, yes.
And
Roger Cowan was supposed to star in Star Trek. He was supposed to be Captain Kirk, but then he pulled out at the last minute.
Exactly. And she ended up buying and living in Hedda Hopper's mansion.
No.
Yes.
Wow.
Anyway, she just was, I think she was really classy and really fabulous and very present to her entire career, and seemed to dole out good advice, you know, stayed upbeat and pleasant her whole entire career.
Yeah. And I didn't know that she was still around. It makes you think, wonder how many people are still around that we aren't, you know.
Shirley Jones just turned 90.
Yeah. Angie Dickinson is still around, though we haven't heard anything. Oh. Yeah.
Yeah, it's when they go quiet that you've got to worry. All right. Well, rest in perfection, Barbara Rush and Chase Perdomo.
Yes.
Number two.
Number two.
Was in New York, because the way I managed to lure Nolan to Fogo Island was to promise to take him for a few days in New York. Which so we're in that. And I said, Nolan, you've got to come with me to see Titanic. And Nolan's like, well, I've heard at school that it's not very good. So he went in with low expectations. Oh my God. Oh my God. Tom, it's the most amazing thing. It feels to me like a rusical. I mean, I don't want to upset the people of Titanic, but all the sort of meta humor and silly daftness that so bring joy, queer joy to the rusicals is in Titanic in abundance. Essentially, in a nutshell, and Tom, you got to help me out. It's a jukebox musical, right? And the premise is Celine Dion was on board the Titanic. And she tells the story of her voyage on the Titanic. And I have seen many versions of Celine Dion because it's a drag queen's favorite choice. Right? But this Celine Dion, and in this one, it was Nicole Parker. I believe a number of different people played Celine Dion. But, oh my God. I just couldn't stop grinning like an idiot for an hour and 40 minutes. It's amazing. And you've seen it, Tom, right?
I have. It's highly enjoyable. Ty Blue, who he's an actor, he's many things. He also did casting for Drag Race at one point in our career. But he came up with this idea. I think it started at Rockwell, that restaurant on Vermont.
Oh, yeah, sure.
And he was always promoting it, and it was online. And I thought, oh, that's cute. How great. And then he brought it to New York. You're like, what a miracle. And then it's just taken off. I think Daryl Roth is one of the, I could be wrong,
it's at the Daryl Roth Theater, like just in Union Square.
Yeah,
there is a moment in it I just want to talk about, because there's one moment is when Celine says something. They have some bit of business where they pick two people in the audience and ask them their names and talk about what they're wearing, and then Celine, as the music is playing, has to make up a song using their names and their clothes and their looks, which Rose and Jack have to lip sync along to as she is improvising. I was like, my head's going to explode. I was like, how is she doing this in terms of making up the lines? It wasn't a plant. And it was so clever and so brilliant. They were called John and John, and one was wearing mustard pants and one was wearing plum pants. And she did something with Clue in the library with Grace and Tom. And I was like, but to see Jack and Rose lip syncing it as she's making it up and that kind of corpsing, I was like, it was
that is very advanced,
very cool meta fourth wall, blah blah blah. And then when the iceberg hits and comes on deck and is a person, who is the iceberg? Six queens stand before me. It's not Rue, actually, but the whole thing is this huge chunk of Drag Race. The iceberg is Rue in Drag Race. Making
and you didn't know that going in. You had no idea.
Who will get a lifeboat for their life, basically, is what they have to
yes,
do.
Yes, exactly. And they have to lip sync for life. It is the gayest thing I've ever seen. Everyone in the cast could sing.
Yes.
Just belt it out. My favorite character was Victor Garber, the person playing Victor Garber, because Victor Garber played the builder of the Titanic.
Yes.
He's also the captain, and he's in a rush to get to Fire Island.
Hold on, because my takeaway from all this is that kids in Hollywood High School talk about Titanic.
They don't know what they're talking about. They're ignorant assholes.
That is the most Hollywood thing I've ever heard of, that they have opinions about Off-Broadway.
Right. Off-Broadway. But you can get your tickets at TitanicTheMusical.com. Thank you, Blake. And I'd love to go again with you.
Let's do it.
Well, what about me?
Well, you come too, James. That would be marvelous. Yes. And Blake, of course.
You know what that was like? That was like Scarecrow, I'll Miss You Most of All, is what you just did right there.
Yeah.
Tom, we'll have to go spend time together.
Blake and you and Fugu like, killing
what?
Someone.
How dare you? I'm the Cowardly Lion. You're the Tin Man.
I love you, Fenton. Thank you.
Oh, God.
Hey, buddy.
Let's take a break. That's a good idea. And then when we come back, reveal the number one thing this week that made us go, wow.
You're listening to World of Wonders Wow Report. Things that make us go wow.
Welcome back to the Wow Report. Fenton here with Blake and James and Tom. We're all off to see Titanic. But in the meantime, before we go...
This is for Blake, because James and Blake will be staying in Los Angeles. Thank you very much.
You wouldn't enjoy it, James.
It's really clever and fun. You wouldn't get it, James.
What?
Full of talented people.
I am a glutton for punishment every week.
We had moved on, but you brought it back.
I think I did. Oh God, I gotta cry. What is the number one thing this week?
Number one.
Well, this is a bit of a denouement, I'm sorry, because there was a huge story earlier in the week about aliens invading LA. It could be a meteor, it could be a rocket ship. What is going on?
It was like 1:45.
All of a sudden, the night sky lit up with these sparkling streaks of light that looked sort of like that the More You Know logo.
Yes.
That sort of streak. That's exactly what it looked like. It went across the sky, and everybody was out taking video of it. If you just go online and Google lights in the sky in Los Angeles, you're going to see how shimmering lights. And they could. And interestingly, the FDA and NASA refused to comment on it and wouldn't say what it was, which led to all sorts of speculation. What could this be? People were calling in saying they're being invaded, that the aliens were coming, blah, blah, blah. Well, since then, a group called... U.S. Space Command, which sounds phony to me. Is that real? I'd never heard. They say that it was a Chinese spacecraft debris that was falling back to Earth, and that it had been, the government knew that it was going to happen, and it would probably happen off the coast of California, blah, blah, blah. I don't believe it for a minute, and I just want to put that out there that I think...
What happened to the aliens in the Miami Mall?
This is them.
Well, I was just telling, Blake had never heard about the Lemurians in Mount Shasta.
Yeah, up by Mount Baldy, where I was going
to
go.
Yeah,
see
you know that the ancient race. It used to be Atlanta and Lemuria were the two civilizations during Pangaea, and then the Lemurians went off and moved to Mount Shasta.
I thought Pangaea was a restaurant.
Well, I have two quick questions. Two quick questions. One, why don't they warn us about these things? And two,
exactly.
When I'm home during the day sometimes, like during the flood, a lot of flood warnings, there'll be that thing that comes over the television. I can never understand what they're saying. Is that the system? Is that what's going to save us when the earthquake comes?
Why was it not doing that at 1 o'clock in the morning when the
aliens were attacking? Why can't I understand it when they're saying, I'm like, please work on this.
Enunciate.
Well, we are all over the map on this number one. So
number
I think
one.
It's a good time to call it a day. Benton, take it away.
All right. We'll see you same time, same place next week. Until then, go out and do something that makes the world go
wow.